Iran's foreign ministry describes the presence of Israel in the region as a source of instability and stresses Tehran's support for the Palestinian resistance. In Gabon, the coup leader is sworn in as interim president. And the UK is mired in a difficult situation, including rising house rent and crumbling school buildings that put children's lives at risk. Welcome. Live from Tehran, you've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran, which says it regards Israel as an illegitimate regime whose presence in the region is the main cause of instability. The foreign ministry spokesman says Tehran has always raised the issue in its meetings with regional countries. Nasser Kanani says Tehran has also emphasized the necessity of support for the Palestinian nation and the resistance front during the meetings. According to Kanani, the Islamic Republic considers Palestine as the main issue of the Islamic world. Iran has repeatedly warned that it will not tolerate the Israeli presence in the Persian Gulf region after two regional countries signed normalization agreements with the regime. Meanwhile, Tehran is ready to share its experiences with friendly countries, especially in the African continent. President Ibrahim Raisi made the announcement in a meeting with visiting Foreign Minister of Burkina Faso, Olivia Rouamba. The president underscored the need for the creation of a joint commission for economic cooperation to boost bilateral ties. Raisi also praised African countries' resistance against global colonialism and terrorism, saying this shows their vigilance and attention to the needs of the day. Rouamba, for her part, said Burkina Faso considers Iran as a friendly country and is interested in strengthening mutual cooperation with it. Israel and Bahrain have agreed to expand economic and tourism cooperation. The agreement was reached during the first visit of the Israeli foreign minister to the Arab country. Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen and his Bahraini counterpart, Abdul Latif bin Rashid Al Zayani, met in the capital, Manama. In a ceremony to open the new Israeli embassy, Cohen said Manama and Tel Aviv have agreed to increase direct flights and boost tourism, trade, and investment. The agreement comes despite widespread opposition to a 2020 U.S.-mediated deal signed by Manama and the Israeli regime. Muslim countries condemn that move as detrimental to regional peace and stability, and Palestinians described it as a stab in their back. At least five Palestinians have been injured, one of them critically, during an Israeli raid of the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian resistance fighters exchange gunfire with Israeli forces during the raid. Regime's military says three members of a Hamas-affiliated group were arrested. Israeli reports also say several residents of the building where the kidnappings took place were also hit by Israeli gunfire. No word yet on their condition. Now, this is the first Israeli incursion into Jenin since the regime killed a dozen Palestinians, including four children, in the camp in July. Israel has killed over 200 Palestinians in its raids across the West Bank so far this year. Mona Kandil joined us earlier with more details on this raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli forces raided the Jenin refugee camp again today. They claimed, according to a statement by the Israeli military, that the Israeli forces raided Jenin refugee camp in order to arrest Palestinian fighters affiliated to the Hamas movement, and they are responsible for a series of shooting that took place in the last few weeks against the Israeli forces and the Israeli military checkpoints, as well as the Israeli settlements. During this operation, the Israelis said that their soldiers exchanged fire with Palestinian fighters and that at least five Palestinians had been wounded. Two of them were among those who had been arrested by the Israeli troops during the military raid. However, according to the Palestinian resistance groups, that their fighters in Jenin area and in other places in the occupied West Bank and the exchange of fire that continued to take place between Palestinian fighters, members of the resistance groups, and the Israeli troops every time had succeeded to force the Israeli troops out of the areas that had been raided recently, like what happened this morning in Jenin.
Now turning to Iraq, where millions of Muslims from across the globe are converging on the holy city of Karbala to commemorate Arba'in. It's the 40th day after the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. People from all walks of life are marching toward the holy city, most notably from Iran. Senior Iranian government officials have made multiple visits to the border crossings to ensure a smooth passage for pilgrims to and from Iraq. Experts say it is significant to keep alive the movement of Karbala, which opposes terrorism, fascism, and despotism. Imam Hussein and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD while fighting courageously for justice against the much larger army of the then tyrant ruler, Yazid. Well, we're going to cross over to Karbala. Correspondent, fortunately, is there, Gisu Misha Ahmadi. Gisu, where you are, lucky you. Tell us what's going on.
Well, Marzia, I arrived in the city of Karbala this morning. The golden dome of Imam Hussein's holy shrine is now just a few meters away from where I'm located right now. An amazing experience, Marzia. Of course, you already know because you've already taken this journey to Karbala. It was an exceptional experience to see people from all walks of life taking part in the Arba'in walk to get from Najaf to Karbala. Many people even farther than that, but most of them started their journey in the city of Najaf to come here to Karbala and arrive here in time for the morning ceremonies that will be held on Arba'in, the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. Of course, as you can tell from the noise that you can hear from this location, these morning ceremonies have already begun, and the people who have arrived in Karbala are already taking part in morning ceremonies in different locations around the holy shrine of Imam Hussein up to another area which is to my right. It is called the Holy Shrine of Abu al-Fazl Abbas, and the area between these two is called Bayn al-Haramain, which is currently jam-packed with people who are taking part in these morning ceremonies. Of course, one would wonder, those who are now en route to Karbala, will they have a chance to come here and visit Imam Hussein's holy shrine? I have to tell you that there is so much empathy among people who are here. Millions have gathered and from different countries, from different cities, and they are still doing the same thing, and not just mourning for Imam Hussein, but trying to uphold the values that he was martyred for, that he gave his life for. And one of those values is definitely being kind to one another. So this is probably the most striking thing that I've seen over the past couple of days.
And that was Gisa Misha Ahmadi, correspondent on the ground there in Karbala. Meanwhile, Afghan Muslims are also joining the procession of Arba'in pilgrims to send a message of solidarity and resistance to the world. More in this report.
Arba'in is one of the largest religious gatherings in the world, commemorating the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. People of various nationalities including Afghans, are marching toward the holy city of Karbala in Iraq. Religious experts say that Arba'een is a demonstration of Shia Muslims' unity and their commitment to their sacred values. They believe it's not only a religious duty, but also a political statement.
Arba'een is one of the most important and valuable occasions for freedom seekers and those who follow the school of Ashura. It's a way of showing their loyalty to the values and principles that Imam Hussein defended, such as justice, dignity, and freedom. It's also a way of resisting the tyranny and oppression that they face from arrogant powers.
According to experts, the participation of Shia Afghans in the Arba'een March is proof of their resilience and devotion in the face of adversity and oppression. It also highlights their goal of preserving their religious identity and traditions. The Arba'een March is a spiritual journey to the holy city of Karbala. Afghan Muslims join pilgrims from other countries to renew their allegiance to Imam Hussein and his thoughts. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Moving on to other news now this hour. The Turkish president, says Ankara, has new proposals for reviving a landmark deal that allowed Ukraine to export grain through the Black Sea. Recep Tayyip Erdogan made the announcement in a press conference after meeting with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, in Sochi. He stressed that Turkey is against alternative proposals to last year's agreement, which expired in mid-July. Putin, for his part, mentioned the constant attacks on Russia's gas pipelines to Turkey, adding that the grain deal corridors should not be used for military purposes. The deal brokered by Turkey and the UN in July of last year aimed at relieving a global food crisis. The UN wants to help Russia with its exports during the war in return for the safe export of Ukrainian grain, but Moscow says none of its requirements were met. And now to Gabon, where the leader of the recent coup that ousted President Ali Bongo has been sworn in as interim president by the Constitutional Court in a ceremony attended by Gabonese military officials and officers. Brice Oligui Nguema pledged free and transparent elections in his country. His appointment puts an end to over half a century of the Bongo dynasty rule over the oil-rich Central African country. Gabon becomes the sixth African country after Mali, Guinea, Sudan, Burkina Faso, and Niger that has undergone a coup in the last 3 years. The former colonial power, France, has joined other Western countries in condemning the latest developments in Gabon. France has also suspended its military cooperation with the new rulers in Libreville. Now, anti-French sentiment keeps growing in coup-hit Niger. People in the capital, Niamey, have held the third day of rallies against the presence of French troops in their country. Demonstrators chanted "Down with France." They also vowed to continue their rallies as they're determined to boot out French troops. Anger at France is on the rise in the West African nation. Since the military coup in July, the junta has already ordered the French ambassador to leave Niger. Well, the military rulers also on Friday took a swipe at the French government for meddling in the country's internal affairs by supporting ousting President Mohamed Bazoum. Since Friday, tens of thousands of people have staged protests outside a military base where French soldiers are stationed. Now to the UK, where a spotlight shines on various issues, from infrastructure concerns and crumbling school buildings to the economic strain caused by rising home rent. New data shows the rise in rent in the UK is taking a heavy toll on people living in deprived areas. According to the estate agent Hamptons, there has been an over 50% increase in monthly rent in poor areas across the country over the past 4 years. That's while rental costs in the wealthiest regions have risen by only 30% during the same period. Now, experts say economic woes have forced many people to move to cheaper areas, causing the price to rise. Now, in the meantime, the education minister has warned that hundreds of school buildings are crumbling and unsafe. The revelation, which comes just days before the start of the new school term, has sparked anger among parents and teachers. The issue has also added to the impression of decaying public infrastructure in Britain, which has faced months of disrupted strikes amid a cost-of-living crisis. Meanwhile, a former senior education official says Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, in his previous role as finance minister, had cut school repair funding in half, despite the department's request for a doubling. Now, the opposition Labour Party has also accused Sunak of putting children's lives at risk, saying the government did not take seriously the repeated warnings about crumbling schools. Furious rail unions in Italy have staged a national strike after five workers were run over by a train earlier this week. Safety in the workplace has now turned into an issue of growing concern in the country. More in this report from Rome.
On Friday, trade and base unions held a nationwide strike over what they call a shameful number of deaths at work. On Wednesday, five maintenance workers were hit by a train while repairing tracks on the Milan-Turin line in northern Italy. The day after, two more workplace fatalities occurred, bringing the total number of deaths on the job to over 700 since January. Unions are saying these tragedies could have been avoided. On Friday, prosecutors placed under investigation an employee of the National Rail Company, RFI, in relation to the accident in which five maintenance workers were hit and killed by a train. Safety in the workplace is an issue of increasing concern in Italy. According to the European Union's statistical agency Eurostat, 776 fatal accidents on the job were recorded in Italy in 2020, by far the highest number in the bloc.
On top of the deaths at work, we also have a high number of non-fatal accidents and practically no protection for workers on very demanding physically and psychologically jobs. Private companies must be given strict rules when doing workplace safety risk assessments, and their managers have to be severely punished when they fail to observe these rules.
Unions are demanding that the workplace safety issue seriously enter the political debate and that the country's work system finally comply with the EU safety standards. Max Civili, Rome.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, has said, "Whenever I remember the martyrdom of the children of Fatima, peace be upon her, my eyes filled with tears." Thank you.
in the limelight.
The connection of the railway from Iran's southwestern Shalamcheh town to Basra city in Iraq has been among the issues pursued by the governments of the two countries for many years. Iran and Iraq have been taking significant steps to boost economic relations in the past few years. The two countries are following up plans for increasing their bilateral economic trade to over $20 billion. Shalamcheh-Basra Railway can be very effective in the expansion of trade between the two countries. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, "Better late than never" could be the phrase to describe the recent practical step to start field work for completion of the 32 kilometers stretch of the long-delayed project to connect the Iranian and Iraqi railway networks to facilitate for transport of goods and passenger travel between the two countries, especially the visit of pilgrims to the holy cities in Iraq and Iran. Expected to be completed within a year and a half, besides connecting Iraq to the elaborate Iranian railway network that is linked to the Caucasus and Central Asia, and through these strategic landlocked regions to the far-off capitals of the two economic industrial giants, Russia and China, it will help materialize the Islamic Republic's cherished goal of access to the Mediterranean shore via Syria. Although oil-rich Iraq is beset with economic problems and lack of funds, which could be resolved through proper management, the main hurdle to the railway link between Shalamcheh and Basra is the continued U.S. meddling in the affairs of the government in Baghdad. The Americans are also hampering the upgrading of trade, transit and travel between Iraq and Syria through the illegal presence of their troops in the Tanf Triangle on the Iraq-Syria-Jordan border, as well as occupation of Deir ez-Zor region and the stealing of its oil resources. Washington hates to see the flourishing of ties in various spheres, including commercial exchanges among the countries of the West Asia region, because of its devilish enmity towards Iran and the Iranian people, whose selfless efforts and positive influence all over the neighborhood it greatly fears. Nonetheless, Iran, as well as Iraq, Syria, and the countries of the region, are determined to dismantle the barriers set up by the U.S. through cooperation and coordination with each other. Iran is fully resolved to help Iraq to establish a railway link between Al-Qa'im and Al-Bu-Kamal on the joint Iraqi-Syrian border in order to extend the track to the Syrian port of Latakia on the Mediterranean Sea, while another track from the Al-Qa'im crossing will proceed to Damascus via Homs. Such an ambitious railway project would contribute to Syria's reconstruction efforts, bolster the transport sector, and facilitate religious tourism between Iran, Iraq, and Syria. Meanwhile, in the recent ceremony on the Iran-Iraq border, Iran's first Vice President, Mohammad Mokhber, who laid the groundwork for the railway link along with Iraqi Prime Minister Al-Sudani emphasized the importance of the north, south and east-west transport corridors for the countries of the region, saying this project also effectively helps in the transfer of tourists and pilgrims between Iran, Central Asian countries and Iraq. Sudani, for his part, thanked Tehran for its help to build the railway bridge over the Arvand waterway and the planned demining operations at the border to clear the mines planted by the repressive Ba'ath minority regime during the eight-year war of the 1980s the U.S. had launched on the Islamic Republic through Saddam. In the new future, millions of Iranian pilgrims visiting the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala and the Iraqi pilgrims visiting the holy cities of Qom and Mashhad will avail of railway facilities for their religious journeys. Also, Anadolu Agency wrote, the construction work on a railway line connecting Iran's southwestern Shalamche border town with Iraq's Basra city kicked off recently in the presence of top officials of the two countries. The ceremony at the joint border in southern Iran's Khuzestan province was participated by Iran's Vice President Mohammad Mokhber and Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia Al-Sudani. Shalamche, one of the key border crossings between Iran and Iraq, is located 15 kilometers west of the Iranian port city of Khorramshahr and 20 kilometers from the southern Iraq's Basra city. The 32-kilometer railway stretch between two border cities is expected to be completed in 18 months, officials said. Iran will be carrying out the work of demining and construction of a bridge over the Arvand River in Basra, while Iraq will carry out the pave work and track laying work of the project, for which it has earmarked $200 million. Speaking at the recent ceremony, Mokhber termed the long-pending project as strategic for the two countries that he said would transform the region. Besides connecting the two neighboring countries and boosting economic cooperation between them, he said the railway line will also contribute to the international transport and transit routes. Mokhber said the Shalamche-Basra railway line will also connect holy shrines in the two countries, referring to Imam Reza Shrine in Iran's Mashhad city and shrines in the Iraqi cities of Karbala and Najaf. Pertinently, millions of Iranians and non-Iranians have crossed through Shalamche and other joint border crossings in recent weeks to travel to Iraq for the annual Arba'in pilgrimage.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
We begin by offering our condolences to the Imam of our time, Imam Al-Hujjah, to the ulama, to the maraja, to the scholars, and to all of us who are gathered here today, and to the believers around the world commemorating the Arba'in. And we ask Allah first and foremost, as we begin, to allow all of those Zawar of Abu Abdullah alayhi salam who have been blessed this year to be able to complete the ziyarat of Imam al-Hussein Abul Fadl Abbas and the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. We ask Allah to allow them to return back home safely. And we ask Allah to allow us to have the tawfiq, inshallah, not only next year in the Arba'een, but as frequently as we can go to be in the presence of our master, Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, alayhi salatu wassalam. Historians mention that when Abu Abdullah on the day of Ashura, before each and every companion would go to the battlefield, knowing that they would not return back on that day of Ashura, they knew that on the 10th of Muharram that they would be going, and maybe if they had a chance, they would be able to come back one last time to greet Abu Abdullah and see his illuminating face. But they knew that that may be the last moment. And we're told in the books of Maqtal that one of the verses that Imam Hussein would recite every time a companion would go forth is the verse I began with from chapter 33, Surah Al-Ahzab, verse 23, where Allah says, "Amongst the believers there are men who are truthful to their promise and their pledge. They are some of them who go forth and accomplish their vow, the promise that they have set forth, and others who are waiting, and that they would never have any wavering or change in their hearts." Brothers and sisters, it was Abu Abdullah on the day of Ashura who would recite this verse every time a companion would go forth, that these were men who were going forth in the way of Allah. There were thousands of people who had the opportunity to join the caravan of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, to become shaheed, to be remembered in the annals of history, but it is only those few select men and few women who gave their lives on the plains of Karbala. After all of these tragedies had befell Ali Muhammad on the day of Ashura, as we know that the caravan, they were kept in Karbala for a few days. They eventually made their way to Kufa. From Kufa, they were taken all the way to Sham. And in Sham, we know of the tragedies that Bibi Zainab alayhi salam had to face. We know that the Ahlul Bayt were kept at the gates of Sham for 3 days as the cursed Yazid began to decorate the city, as he began to get the musicians and the singers and the dancers ready to welcome in the caravan of Ali Muhammad. We know that all of this waiting eventually culminated in the Ahlul Bayt made to go through the Bazaar of Sham. They were forced to go into the presence of the cursed Yazid. They were forced to go through all of those difficult scenes of seeing the head of Abu Abdullah on the platter as the cursed Yazid would take his stick and poke at the face of Abu Abdullah. As the cursed Yazid would drink alcohol and he would throw some of that wine near the blessed head of Abu Abdullah. As Bibi Sakina alayha salam, for those few days that they're in Sham, when she's in the dungeon of Sham and she's crying out that she wants to see her father, she has that nightmare, as we have heard on the nights of the Shahadat Bibi Sakina. And when she's crying out that she wants to see her father, and the cursed Yazid hears the cries of the young Sakina, and this evil man says, if she wants her father, then go and take the head of her father. And as we know, when that head is presented to her, she opens the cover, and instead of seeing food or something to drink, she sees the bloody head of her father. It was on that time that Bibi Sakina passes away. Yet another tragedy the Ahlul Bayt have to face. All of these tragedies, one by one, going all the way to Sham, spending many days in Sham, would eventually culminate in this day of Arba'een. As Yazid, la'natullah alayhi, he realizes that he can no longer keep Ali Muhammad in the city of Sham. The sermon of Bibi Zainab alayhi salam, the sermon of Imam As-Sajjad, having them in his presence, having them in the city of Sham, that this meant that his government would be uncontrollable, that he would lose his power and authority. People would begin to ask questions, why is the family of the Rasul in the city of Sham? And therefore, brothers and sisters, as the historians mention, a point finally came where Yazid orders that Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam, with the caravan, with the women and the children, be allowed to go back home to Medina. One of the things that the cursed Yazid does before he allows them to go is he takes the fourth imam, he calls the fourth imam into his presence, and he begins to offer his crocodile tears. He begins to feel remorse and sympathy of what happened. He goes to the extent of saying that, had I been there in Karbala, I would not have done what had happened to your family. And obviously these were all lies on the part of Yazid. But the curse Yazid says one thing to Imam Sajjad. He says that I allow you to go back home. And Imam Sajjad says, just give me three things that I want you to do. Imam Sajjad, Yazid says, ask whatever you want, I will give it to you. Imam Sajjad says, number one is I want all of those belongings that you have stolen from our family. These had no physical value, brothers and sisters. These were the heirlooms that Bibi Fatima alayhi salam had made with her own hands for the family. Imam Sajjad says, I want these back. Number two, he says, I want the heads of the shuhada. I want the head of my father, of all of the shuhada, so that I can bury them when we go back home. And the third thing, he says that if you have desired to kill me, if you want to do away with me, then I appoint some trustworthy individuals to take the caravan of women and children back home to Medina. As he says these three things, the curse Yazid says, eventually he submits, and Yazid says, you will get all three of your wishes. And as Imam Sajjad begins to leave the presence of Yazid, the Yazid gives Imam Sajjad some gold coins. He says that, take this money, you'll need this on the way back. And as we know that Imam Sajjad, the Ahlul Bayt, would never accept the money of such individuals. And so as historians say, that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam distributes this to the poor people of Sham. Brothers and sisters, as the camels were getting ready to go back home to Medina, as the camels were getting ready, as the caravan was getting prepared to go back home, once again the cursed Yazid comes into the presence of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Yazid turns to Hazrat Umm Kulthum alayhi as-salam. He tells her that, I'm sorry for what has happened. Again, crocodile tears that Yazid is shedding. And again, he offers her money as well as a compensation for what has happened. She turns to Yazid in anger and rage, and she says that, do you think that you can buy the blood of Abu Abdullah with a few of your gold coins? We have no need for you, nor of any of your money. Eventually, brothers and sisters, as this conversation ends, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the caravan of the family, Bibi Zainab, all the people who have remained, they get ready to go back home to Medina. As we know, that journey takes them so many days. And as they reach to a point on the journey, the crossroads, with one road going towards Iraq, one road going towards Medina. It is at this point that the hadith mentions, the historians note, that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam makes the decision as the imam. And he tells the caravan leader, he says that, we are going towards Iraq. We are going towards that land of Karbala. And as they begin to continue down that journey, as they begin to walk towards the city of Karbala, towards the desert of Karbala, that long and difficult journey that began so many days before, when Abu Abdullah was with them, when Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was with them, when Imam Hazrat Ali Akbar was there, when Hazrat Ali Asghar was there. Now the Ahlul Bayt are making this journey back to Karbala, but none of these people are there anymore with them on the journey. They're in their homes in Karbala. They're under the ground in Karbala.
Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever
in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah, unto my last breath, I will remember Hussein. Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever in our hearts and in our minds.
I swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت القرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
The third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, BRI, will be held in Beijing in October. Over the past decade, China has signed documents for the co-building the BRI with over 150 countries and 30 international organizations. A total of more than 3,000 cooperation projects under the initiative has delivered nearly $1 trillion of investment and generated a strong growth across partner countries. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times noted, this year marks the 10th anniversary of the proposal of the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI. Over the past decade, Africa has emerged as a prime example of how the BRI has delivered tangible benefits to both China and Africa, fostering closer ties between the two sides. The remarkable progress can be seen in numerous infrastructure projects undertaken by Chinese companies, the increasing investments in Africa, the growing China-Africa trade, and the strengthening of people-to-people exchanges. The people-to-people exchanges between China and Kenya have laid a solid foundation since the time of legendary Chinese navigator Zheng He's voyages to the coast of East Africa. With the strong driving force of jointly building the BRI, the friendly exchanges between the two countries are expected to deepen further. Various sectors in Madagascar generally welcome the BRI and believe that the cooperation between China and Madagascar under the framework of the BRI meets the development needs of Madagascar and truly achieve shared benefits. Among them, President Andry Rajoelina's high evaluation of the BRI has left a deep impression on them. He stated that China is a reliable and important partner for Madagascar's development, and Madagascar's determination and confidence in actively participating in the construction of the Belt and Road Initiative will not change. In September last year, President Rajoelina personally attended the inauguration ceremony of the rehabilitation project of the National Road 5A and drove smoothly on the newly repaired road. The cooperative construction of the BRI has not only effectively promoted policy, communication, trade, facilitation, infrastructure, connectivity, and financial integration, but also promoted people-to-people communication between China and Africa. The exchanges and communication between the two sides have continued to expand, enhancing mutual understanding and friendship, and laying a solid foundation for friendly relations between the two countries. Madagascar is among the first African countries to sign the BRI with China. The BRI has brought enormous influence to countries along the route since it was proposed 10 years ago. Madagascar is an island country in the Indian Ocean. It possesses abundant natural gas resources. Madagascar's offshore oil resources are very rich, and it also has a good strategic location advantage. And there is great potential for cooperation with China in oil refining and port development. In particular, the port can facilitate the transportation of goods from southern Africa and support the establishment of cement plants and aluminum mines. In fact, Madagascar is not poor at all. On the contrary, it is very rich with abundant underground resources. There are no traps in the BRI. On the contrary, for some developing countries, especially some emerging economies, the BRI presents a very good development opportunity. China has its own development planning, and it develops its plans in a coherent manner, which some countries do not. This coherence has also brought great opportunities for China's development. The BRI is a win-win project, which is very different from the narratives by the Western countries, who always talk about conspiracy theories. Western countries put forward the so-called debt trap theory to try and hinder the development of these developing countries. There is no room for any conspiracy. Meanwhile, China Daily wrote China will host in October the third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, the most highlighted event to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Belt and Road Initiative. The forum in Beijing will also be an important platform for various parties to discuss high-quality cooperation in jointly building the Belt and Road, Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said recently. China is maintaining communication with various parties on preparations for the forum, Wang told a daily news conference. Focusing on boosting connectivity, the initiative aims to provide a platform for global economic cooperation and inject fresh impetus into the development of various countries as well as global economic growth, he said. Over the past decade, China has signed cooperation documents on the BRI with more than 150 countries and more than 30 international organizations. The initiative has galvanized nearly $1 trillion of investment globally and created more than 3,000 projects. Wong said that debris has become the most welcomed global public good, as well as the largest platform for international cooperation. The full implementation of BRI transportation projects could increase global real income by 7/10 to 2.9% and could help lift 7.6 million people out of extreme poverty and 32 million people out of moderate poverty globally by 2030, the World Bank has estimated. Programs under the initiative also actively fulfill environmental responsibility by carrying out ecological and environmental governance as well as biodiversity conservation, Wong said. According to Wong, China has signed more than 50 cooperation documents on ecological and environmental protection with relevant parties and has launched Belt and Road partnerships on green development with 31 countries. China will take the third forum as an opportunity to work with the international community to sum up experiences and draw a new blueprint to continue to promote high-quality construction of the Belt and Road. Also, recently, Wang announced that in accordance with law, China will impose reciprocal visa restrictions on some U.S. individuals involved in spreading rumors of forcible assimilation in Tibet and those who have long meddled in Tibet-related issues. The countermeasure came after the U.S. regime announced imposition of visa restrictions on Chinese officials over the alleged forcible assimilation of Tibetan children in boarding schools recently.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Reasons behind enemies targeting Islam is the political rules of Islam. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the Supreme Assembly of Commanders and Officials of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps on August 17, 2023, in the Imam Khomeini's Hosseiniyeh. The documents from Den of Espionage, former U.S. Embassy, were uncovered. The documents from Den of Espionage clearly stated that the West designed a strategic policy so that this revolution would not take place or that it would not last. That strategic policy consisted of creating continuous crises and incidents. You see, at the beginning of revolution, we had problems in the west of the country. We had problems in the northwest. We had somewhat of a problem in the northeast. We had problems in the south, and we had problems in the southeast. In other words, there were always crises happening around the country. This news shed light on what the interpretation of these events were. Those events were not spontaneous. There were crises one after another. After a while, Saddam attacked and began the war as well. Who was the one that was able to suppress these crises, incidents, and riots, and to save the country from them?
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Who was able to save the people of Kurdistan, the people of Balochistan, and the people from different regions in the country from these riots? Who was able to save the people of Tehran from the waves of terrorist attacks? The IRGC. The IRGC was the organization that defeated the policy successive crises that they had designed to paralyze the revolution. They were the ones who extinguished this fire. The enemy's goal was to use these crises to take the life out of the revolution. After the revolution was weakened, then they wanted to create a coup like the ones that occurred on the 28th of Mordad, August 19, 1953, against the democratically elected Mossadegh government, and to destroy the revolution. The IRGC prevented more 28th of Mordads from happening. The IRGC did not allow the correct movement that the country had started to be stopped by the enemy's policy. This is why the West hates the IRGC so much. This is why they always mention the IRGC's name with such hatred and spitefulness. So this is also a part of what the IRGC has accomplished.
That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.